This is the second half-hour program featuring segments from the 10th annual AFN convention held at Anchorage in October. I'm Mo Wasley, and welcome to Potlatch. On the topic of education, State Senator Frank Ferguson of Kotzebue told of state responsibilities in providing equal education for rural students.
Sending children hundreds and thousands of miles away from home has been an ongoing program since the territorial days. It is tragic to ship an adolescent child away from home for 9 to 10 months a year for any reason. The child is deprived of parental guidance, community influence in their informal education, and the love and affection needed at that tender age. Adequate educational facilities are essential to a good educational system, and our children are our greatest resource. It is imperative that they be given the opportunity for an equal education required by the laws of our land.
Our next segment has Phil Smith, Executive Director of Rural CAP, talking about subsistence issues and relating the discovery of America to bureaucracy.
Christopher Columbus was the first bureaucrat in the Western Hemisphere. When he left Spain, he didn't know where he was going. When he landed on the shores of America, he didn't know where he was. When he got back, he didn't know where he'd been. He told everybody the wrong thing about what he'd seen, and he did it all on a grant. So in a way, I'm not sure that this issue is something that can be dealt with by bureaucrats, by people who are with agencies, by people who don't know and who don't live and who don't feel subsistence. It's been one of my observations that part of the problem with this whole subsistence issue is that lawyers want to define it, and Congress wants to define it. They say, sure, well, yeah, we got to protect subsistence. What is it? And maybe, you know, one reaction to that is the fact that subsistence is a word that's being imposed on a lifestyle from people who don't and cannot appreciate the value of that lifestyle. It's a problem, you see, because everybody else wants to come up here and use the land and drill oil wells in it, or set up bird watching posts, or ride down the rivers on rafts. But, you know, before we can do that, with this, for instance, on the D2 issue, the 80 million acres of land, we have to define subsistence. By defining it, or by attempting to define it, or by even being arrogant enough to think that we could come up with the basic definition, but using the terms a basic human right, we felt then and continue to feel that no one, whether it be the United States government, the government of the state of Alaska, oil companies, lawyers, poverty programs like Rural CAP, no one then has a right to interfere with a lifestyle and to interfere with the development of a culture, of a variety of cultures in rural Alaska, when that development or that cultural development does not take place on the terms of the people whose lifestyle is being affected by the decisions made by the United States government and the state of Alaska and all the other agencies and entities that are involved with what happens to the lands and the resources in the state of Alaska. We have come perhaps to the realization that the key to this is the decision-making process affecting the land and the resources, and that it is critical that individuals and villages and other communities get involved in that decision-making process. And to sensitize Christopher Columbus and other bureaucrats to the fact that land use decisions affect people, land use decisions affect cultures, land use decisions affect some of the most fundamental of all human rights that are implicit in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, and that involved in these management decisions and land use decisions, in these decisions, must be the point from which we proceed if what we call, without even really knowing what it means, subsistence, is going to continue.
And the anthros still keep coming like death and taxes to our land. To study the feathered freaks with funded money in their hand. Like a Sunday at the zoo, their cameras click away, taking notes and tape recordings of all the animals that play. Here come the anthros, better hide your past away. Here come the anthros on another holiday. And the anthros bring their friends to see the circus, watch the show. And when their pens run dry, they pack up the things and away they go. But there's nothing left to study, there's nothing left to see. Still the anthros keep on searching for the clue and for the key. Here come the anthros, better hide the past away. Here come the anthros on another holiday. Then back they go to write their books, tell the world there's more. But there's nothing left to write, it's all been done before. And not a cent of funded money that the anthros get to spend is ever given to their disappearing feathered friends. Here come the anthros, better hide the past away. Here come the anthros on another holiday.
Floyd Westerman. Gordon Watson, representing the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, spoke about preservation of habitat for migratory birds.
I think it's important to establish that our areas of concern in the service are essentially the migratory bird resources, the rare and endangered species, and at this moment in time, the polar bear and sea otter of the Marine Mammal Act. 6 months ago, of course, we had the responsibility for walrus. That management responsibility has been turned back to the state. I honestly expect that the control for all of the other marine mammals, including seals and whales, will be returned to the state sometime in the future, perhaps later rather than sooner. As we look at our responsibilities under the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, it's important to understand that we're talking about an international resource. It spends part of its time in Alaska in the summer on the breeding grounds. It spends a part of its life going north and south, spending time in Canada. It spends a part of its life in the winter on the wintering grounds. For these habitats to be jeopardized directly affects the welfare of everybody that utilizes these birds. For example, were it not for the availability of wintering habitats in California, there would be fewer birds to come back to Alaska to satisfy the needs of the Alaska people. Similarly, if we have destruction of the Alaska habitats, the sport hunters in the lower 48 are going to have less birds. I think it's important to understand that every time a sport hunter buys a duck stamp, that money goes right into the acquisition of land for additional refuges, particularly in the lower 48. Last year, we took 10 people from the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta to California, Washington, and Oregon so that they could see where the Alaska birds were wintering. And I guess the thing that impressed them, excuse me, was to see this great number of birds confined to these very, very small areas called refuges in the lower 48. And at least those folks, as they told me, were beginning to develop a new appreciation of the interrelationships between the sport hunter in California and what he did for the welfare of the birds back in Alaska and their use by the people. I think the responsibility of the Fish and Wildlife Service is, first of all, the welfare of the habitats of the wildlife resources. If we're not concerned about the welfare of the habitat, there simply are not going to be the wildlife resources produced for which I have a responsibility and many of you folks have a need. Our second concern has to be for the welfare of the resource. If the populations of migratory birds are not maintained at a healthy stock, your opportunities into the future to continue a lifestyle are rapidly diminished. I think it's important to reassert some of the things that are changing, that impact on the way we now have to look at the world. We've had advances in technology. The white man uses them, and the Alaska Native uses them. The snow machine has replaced the dog team. That's understandable. The automatic rifle or semi-automatic rifle has replaced the spear, the bow and arrow. Monofilament gill nets have replaced primitive traps. All of this means that we have a greater capability for harvesting game and fish in a more efficient manner. Not only that, we're able to range further and further in our quest for these resources. The white man, the non-resident of Alaska, can now go out into the native subsistence areas that 20 years ago was essentially out of range of the airplanes we had in those days. But the Cessna 185 on floats, you know, can take four people in just a couple hours from Anchorage and Fairbanks and be right in the heart of an area no one used many years ago. I think it's important to understand that the natives, too, are extending their hunting areas. Consider the folks from Bethel who charter airplanes and go up to the Innoko and look for moose. Consider those folks from Bethel who go by boats way up the Stony River, a trip of almost 1,000 miles in search of their subsistence resources. Think of those folks from Unalakleet who go clear over to Hooslianau after subsistence resources. So we've had an expansion of the area that people require. And I would suggest that if this trend were to continue, even if you set up subsistence zones, the same conflicts that exist between non-natives and natives would eventually emerge between native villages. It's coming if we continue to expand the use of the resource.
I will pass this way but once. If there's any good that I can do, let me do it now. For I'll never pass this way again. I will will see this day but once. If there's any kindness I can show, let me show it now. For I'll never see this day. If there's any love that I can give, let me give it now. Oh Lord, please show me how. For I'll never know this world. I'll never see this day.
Glenn Campbell. One subject of concern at the convention was D2 lands. Dave Case of Bush Justice at AFN talked about federal and state responsibilities in relation to Native subsistence rights.
It is unthinkable that Congress or the Native people that negotiated the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act intended to waive those hunting and fishing rights in Alaska. We call those hunting and fishing rights, and I mean by that we lawyers, they were termed this in Congress, subsistence rights. The subsistence rights of the Native people. And although the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act claims to waive all Aboriginal land claims, including those of relating to hunting and fishing, the conference report on the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act is very clear that the state of Alaska and the Secretary of the Interior are expected to protect the subsistence rights of the Native people. The taking of fish and game for Native people, and this is just an observation as an outsider, is obviously a vital part, the core of the entire culture or cultures of Native people in Alaska. If the Alaska Native Fund is the bank for the Native profit-making corporations that the villages and the very land that is part of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act are the cultural bank for the Native people. And it is important, it is vital to develop both the profit-making capability of the Native people and to preserve a culture. And then we get to 17D2 of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, which requires the Secretary of Interior to withdraw approximately 80 million acres, I believe, for various National Park Services, wild and scenic rivers, and various other federal land programs. And now there are bills in Congress that will define how those federal lands will be managed and what will be
who will have the say over the control of the renewable resources on those lands. And perhaps these D2 bills, this D2 legislation, is now the chance, and perhaps the only chance, to preserve the subsistence rights of the Alaska Native people.
Bob Hinman of the State Department of Fish and Game outlined the formulation of subsistence zones and spoke about the preservation of a resource.
In the case of the Western Arctic caribou, please note that the priority was given not on the basis of ethnic origin nor to all residents of a given area, but to villages and individuals within this area based on individual need. Our responsibility as a Department of Fish and Game is to the resource. That is what we are responsible for managing. That is what we are responsible for saving. Legislation sets up a specific procedure whereby residents of an area may petition the Board of Game for the establishment of subsistence hunting areas, with subsistence here being legally defined, and the only place I know of it is legally defined, as being the use of game resources by a resident of the state for his personal use. Just to briefly run over that statute, note that the board may establish the subsistence hunting zones in any unit or subunit or portion of subunit upon, one, the recommendation of the department, or, two, the majority vote of the local advisory committees for that area, three, the written petition of not less than 100 interested residents of that game management unit or subunit, or the written petition of not less than 25 interested residents of an area which is requested for establishment as a subsistence area. I think I've talked so much about subsistence in the last few months that I'm getting so I can't even pronounce it anymore. My last comment on subsistence is perhaps kind of a gloomy one, and I don't wish to be always negative on this, but I am concerned that with the current push for subsistence rights, the potential, at least, for increasing polarization and conflict between various groups of Alaskans, especially between whites and natives, is there. At a time when I think it extremely important that all Alaskans be working together to solve a lot of problems we've got. Game management, land claim settlement, oil development, D2, whatever. We've got lots of problems. I think it's very important that all of us be working together on these as an Alaskan people.
But only love me.
a group called Bad Company. Our final segment has Chief Andrew Isaac of Dot Lake talking about changes that he's seen and hope for the younger generation.
I was born here in Alaska. I raised in Alaska. I raised in the hard way. I didn't raise by welfare. I didn't go in the hospital when I get hurt. I didn't go no place, just right there in the home. My mothers, my daddies, my grandmothers, my grandfathers, my aunt, not the people, take care of me. You like to hear back an old story about back to long before you, people coming in Alaska. Today we have a lot of new coming. Us native in Alaska to be even people that we don't know, we not even met. Today our oil under our land has to go. Set up pipe line, 8 more than 100 miles. You young generation, you have to look them. My young generation, Indian, your education should lead you to go in there and main office to make you leaving. I make my leaving before you was born. Was trapping, hunting. For 3 years, I didn't get no moose. Our game even came out, throwing our land. Sure, they talk about a fishing game. I understand that too. Because they let the world population to grow up. Us Indian Alaska, that animal that we don't want it. They want that animal to kill other animals to clean them up. Us human in need from Alaska, he want we starve. Our children have to go to school. We have to support ourselves. It's as good as somebody else. My friend that told me, you better sign this, your retirement. That one mistake I make. I really don't know about it. I did. You can get your pension, you can get this, you can get that. You know what pension I got? I got it in my suitcase at home. $1. You don't feel like to help me? Help my young generation. Right here, they're with crowd with you. They're missing. My young generation, be sure to get up. Work yourself. Try to line up right. Try to do right. When I'm talked, I don't need to see the book. I never write down. I remember. Our government, we vote for us native from Alaska. All of us. My young generation appreciate to be here again to speak to you. And good luck and God bless you. And thank you for listening.
And that was Chief Andrew Isaac of Dot Lake. And thank you for listening to Potlatch. I'm Mo Osley.
Potlatch is produced by KUAC under Title I of the Higher Education Act.